going to open the Wage Subcommittee on Human Resources this afternoon, and we will be dealing again with House Bill 5029. Today we'll deal with CHR and the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse. We have public hearing on it, and the agency presentation today will have the work session on this portion of the budget. So, Katie. In your packet, you have a total of four pages. The first two pages are is the work session memo that kind of outlines the recommendations. And then the last two pages are the spreadsheet where we can walk. I'll walk through the various funding and then the recommendations from there. I think what I'll probably do is go ahead and start on the spreadsheet. That's the easiest to walk down. I'll start with the current service level for the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse. The general fund on the current service level is $16,021,739. Other funds is $15,138,552. And federal funds is $45,474,076 for a total of $76,634,367, and with a total of 52.32 FTE. Under the program officer,
Madam Chair, is Representative Brown.
Could you just very briefly explain to me why the current service level is less than the 97.99? Did we have some one-time expenditures that made that go up to 80 million? And look at the top.
Reduction.
Uh-huh.
There were five grants that were not continued in the 9901 budget.
Okay.
And I
okay.
They had phased in.
Okay. Thank you.
That's it. On program option packages, I'll kind of briefly review what these packages were about. On package 410, this was the program improvement for alcohol and drugs. This particular package was to increase the funding for wraparound services for clients. It targeted high-risk families and youth. And it worked on particular areas like prevention, treatment, residential treatment. It also had money in there for the for safe drug-free housing. And so it was their main package for $20 million. There was $18 million in general funds, other funds of $2 million, and these were TANF funds that were directed for the drug-free housing. Package 407 was support services packages funding, and this was there's $234,857 in general fund, other funds of $12,631, and federal funds of $242,102 for a total of $489,590. These are, remember, our prorated services for the director's office. And we did discuss those, and you'll see that we are reducing those some in the recommendation based on the reductions that were taken in the director's office. The governor's recommended budget was $34,256,596, and this was a 131.15% increase over the estimated budget. The other funds amount was $17,151,183, and this was 15.18% increase over the 97 estimated. The federal funds was $45,716,178 on federal funds, and this was actually a minus 9.26%, which primarily is caused from those grants. For a total of $97,123,957. And that's the total budget. Do you want to vote on these in each one, or do you want to go on all the way through?
Well, actually, we could vote on the current service level if you want to do that. That would
okay. Well, but she's not giving us her recommendation.
No, it would just be the current service
well,
level.
You didn't even say that, though. You didn't say what your recommendation was.
The current service level would be what it would cost to operate the program without any of the enhancements. I don't make a recommendation on the current service level.
So then we would
We don't need to vote on that.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm confused.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Well, your excuse, Representative.
I apologize.
Like right now.
Sorry. Yeah, I was not intending to leave. I was going to apologize.
Okay. Thank you. Well, of course, I'm not free to stay. Well.
The Attorney General's hourly rate reduction, the general fund reduction there is $1,138. The other fund, $191. Federal fund, $217, for a total of $1,446.
And so, Katie, this is just as a result of the AG's rate being
from
the lesser rate.
Yeah, it went from $92 to $90, and so all the agencies are taking the adjustment.
Okay.
The general fund reduction, we worked with the agency on this, is a total of $125,758, and I accepted all of these particular reductions. What this included, there's a position that a regional alcohol and drug coordinator position, and they would delay hiring for 9 months. And that particular position performs quality assurance and technical assistance reviews. Also, we would reduce the S&S associated with that particular position, and then they also would delay some other personal services hiring. And I accepted those reductions in the general fund portion.
Questions about that?
The director's office prorate reductions, if you recall, when we went through, we reduced two particular areas in there. One was in the general fund, or with the general fund reductions that they had taken, the 4%. And then the other one was in the desktop. We took $2 million out of that. And so the prorate has to be reduced in the agencies, in the divisions, and that's what this particular dollar amount is, the $24,888 in the general fund category, and then federal funds is $23,672 for a total of $48,360.
So this is actually something that we've already acted on. You're just
correct.
Showing that
correct.
We did the director's
correct.
Portion.
Okay. In package 410, there was a total of $20 million. I'm recommending that because of general fund constraints that we not approve the $18 million. There is a technical adjustment in this package. I am recommending that they do approve the $2 million, but originally this particular package, the $2 million, was going to come through AFS. And as it turns out, it's going to come directly to alcohol and drug. And so there's a technical adjustment from other funds to federal funds. And so the total would be minus $18 million on this particular patent. Mm-hmm. But the TANF dollars would still be in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, Katie, just help me. This $2 million that appears here from the general fund, this is what we...
Yeah.
Got from the AFS budget when we right. said that we wanted to serve TANF eligible okay.
And there's actually a total of $4 million coming from AFS. $2 million will actually be federal dollars. And then $2 million will be general fund, but it's maintenance of effort. And so it has to be directed towards TANF clients. But it is general fund, but they will have to target those particular clients. So there is a total of $4 million coming from AFS.
Okay.
Do all of these, the $4 million have to be directed toward AFS clients?
TANF eligible clients.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions?
Are we commenting on these yet? Or?
Yes. Do you have a comment, Senator?
My comment is not a surprise. I mean, the room was full on the day that we had testimony on particularly package 410. We even had a circuit court judge, as you can recall, who said that you save $5.60 for every dollar you spend in alcohol treatment and prevention and so on. And so, and I honestly believe those things. My own experience proof, the family's experience proof, the judicial costs, the court costs, prison costs and everything else related to drug and alcohol abuse. We're going to cut $18 million, and I suggest very strongly that it's going to cost us about $100 million, this cut.
Actually, it isn't a cut, Senator. It's we're not accepting the enhanced.
We're not.
It is an existing service. Therefore, we won't be wasting $100 million because this never was there.
It's a cut from the governor's recommended budget. And I'm still suggesting that there will be costs associated with what we do today. We have a huge, huge problem in alcohol and drug abuse in this state, and it's getting worse. And we are not, I mean, I don't think that this was just a frivolous attempt to spend money. I think it was an attempt to address a huge problem. I remember one of our secretaries of health back in Washington, D.C., saying if we don't get a handle on the alcohol problem in this country, we aren't going to have a civilization. And I think it's pretty darn close to being right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to, as strongly as I could, voice real, serious concerns about this, well, just that we're not addressing this huge problem.
I concur with Senator Shields. I think this is an important investment that we should be making. And my concern is that this is it's a possible effective way to reduce our prison population and the burdens on our judicial system. And so I would support this investment. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Well, I think every time that we examine a program, we find that we've got certain things that we could add to it that would be very, very nice to have, as where there are no limits on the funding we have to spend. But again, we go back and everybody's decrying not having money to put in here, but they've been money to spend it somewhere else, or to support somebody that's willing to spend it somewhere else, instead of supporting some programs like this. With the benefit of my pastoral friend over here, they come to call the adults under the table. And I heat like mad to support something like this, knowing myself as chair of the subcommittee in 93 and 94 of the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Committee, knowing of the needs and of the good work those programs do. And I guess I pretty well made a statement the other morning in the education committee, subcommittee, of how I felt about some of the things that were going on there in comparison to what we're having to do here. But I would like to see us at least, though I fully intend to support this, I would like to see us keep in mind that if we ever got a chance to have some add backs or to do some enhancements, that this would certainly be one of the things that we considered.
And I would certainly support that as well, to at least add it to an add back list. I would say that probably we're not going to be able to add back from things that we save in the DHR budget. I would hope that as negotiations go on, and we start the negotiations on the budget, that this will be an area that we as a subcommittee might be able to make some decisions to add this particular package back.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
I would like to also say that I believe that the leadership amongst our human resources agencies are being put in a terrible bind as to how they are going to have to try to answer and do all the things that's expected of them or that they feel are expected of them next time with the type of support they've got from some of their budgets. So just would like to say that on record.
Well, and I just want to say for the committee's benefit, you know what we did in the AFS budget, and knowing what we did and tried to move over here,
looking back on it, you probably know then that Dan and I knew what we were going to have to do today. And it was an attempt to try to restore some of this package and create some money. And we actually tried to add as much, I think, as $8 million, $7 million. But it would have had to been targeted at a specific group of people. And we need, obviously, to spread this money out a little bit further to other folks that are in need of this. Mm-hmm. But I would also, there are suggestions about what we can do too, even for this, because it is a problem. I think we're all fairly well aware of that alcohol and drugs is a problem, and it's a social problem. It's really eating at our society as a whole, and you learn about all the folks that are incarcerated, many of them because of their addiction problems. There was an improvement plan, an alcohol and drug treatment system improvement plan that I have a copy of here. It's from the Office of the Governor and the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs. And this is dated. But one of the things that was stated in here is that, and I'll read you from this report, page 5. Sorry, I don't have copies for you. But,
okay.
A group of agency representatives formed the Access to Alcohol and Other Drug Treatment Work Group to evaluate Oregon's system of treatment, and several major conclusions emerged. One, the treatment services delivery system is fragmented. Numerous agencies provide uncoordinated services. There is no consistent method to measure service delivery and track client performance. A substantially increasing number of human service and corrections clients need treatment, and funding for treatment is disparate and inadequate. And from this particular element, I know that there have been other reports that have also indicated that and when we had that public testimony and the judge came forward and told, it wasn't the judge, it was a doctor that had done a report and said that there were savings to be that would occur when you make this investment, then what happens later is savings down the road will occur. And I think we need to be consistent about trying to gather those as we make these investments and be able to prove that, because I think it's one of the things that helps make the case to be able to do it. When you're talking about budgetary issues, certainly the case is made when you know about the social problems that exist and that don't really have to do with dollars. But in view of the fact that we have a delivery system that may be fragmented and we have uncoordinated systems, I would like to suggest that somehow, hopefully we will be able to add this back or even a portion of it. And whatever, if we do are able to add back a portion, what I would suggest is that we send the money to the e-board for a plan to use the whatever portion, whatever amount, so we'd know how it would be expended, because I know there were also some intended uses and dollar amounts that were going to go to specific programs. And so if there is a lesser dollar amount, I'd sure like to suggest that we see where you would determine those priorities would lie. But I'd also like to have both the Department of Administrative Services and the LFO office try to put together an accounting of where these services are being given, where they're fragmented, and really the budgetary aspects of that, what we are spending in what departments, whether it's corrections or in the community, the county, wherever it is, but primarily for state, state monies, how the state monies are being spent, so that we can sort of pull all this together and determine where the money's being spent, and then maybe even more efficiently and effectively join some of these fragmented services and really make a difference in this area.
Madam Chair, may I respond? I like Bill's Department of Administrative Services. I think your suggestion is a very good one because I think the report points out there are a lot of improvements that can be made to this system. In fact, Barbara Smugley and her staff have spent most of this biennium trying to identify what the issues are with the system, what the changes need to be made, and that was the foundation for the $20 million that comes to you, is that they have developed a plan based on the deficits we've seen, and we know that we have to put some money in the system in order to make it more effective and more efficient and to provide the resources, the coordinated resources between not only the alcohol and drug office, but corrections and the local providers. So I think we can do them that as an interim report, but we also have that information available for you now.
Do you actually have the budgetary numbers? Like corrections, for instance, the number of dollars they spend and how much go for the paroled individuals and who delivers that service?
Madam Chair, we did a substantial amount of data collection that we didn't bring forward to this committee because there's a lot of it. But we'd be more than happy to bring that forward and to show you the progress we've made and our plan for the future, if that would be more helpful.
I would have you work with the LFO staff to help us see where you're...
Sure, just expand on that a little bit. What you read, I think, is important for the committee to understand. We brought this forward to the governor as agency. I mean, we didn't wait till the legislature said you all should start coordinating and stuff. And several of us as agency heads went to the governor and said, look, this doesn't make any sense for OIA to be buying A&D services and corrections, and DHR, Department of Education buys A&D prevention services and so on. And sometimes we bid against each other for providers and wind up paying more than we should. So we've recognized that we needed to have a better look at that. And the governor created this group that's described in here, the Access to Treatment Group, with all of those agencies and asked me to chair it. And Barbara has been the staff, and we've worked for about 5 months now as a group of agencies putting together a plan. We have a timeline. We can show you what's already been achieved and where we're moving towards. So I think we're going in the right direction. I just want you to know we don't disagree with you. I mean, as agencies, we believe we have that responsibility. Barbara and I, for nearly 2 years since the end of last session, have traveled across this state talking about alcohol and drug being the number one priority for DHR. And in every one of those speeches, we've said, we can't ask the legislature for another dollar until we can convince them that every dollar that we're getting now is spent in the right way. And I believe that. I think that's what you're saying to us, too. And we're trying to build the information that will show you that we are spending the money well. But once we do that, that isn't going to get it for us. And I mean, you have a tough job, and all of you do. But I have to tell you, this is a bigger problem than we can take care of just by merging our resources. We'll do a better job. We can do a better job. But just that alone won't get it for us. And, you know, what I struggle with is there's a juvenile crime package that lots of people have been involved in trying to put together, members of the legislature and the executive branch, and I think we've got a pretty good package put together. That package expects that there's going to be resources for A&D treatment. I don't have them right now. I don't have any way to plug that into this package that's planned, and the same is true for adult corrections. So it's just important to know that as we build one response here for the either adult or juvenile crime prevention, and we don't have the resource to back it up, it's not going to be successful anymore. So,
and Gary, I wasn't suggesting that by bringing this, coordinating some of the services, that you would not need additional funding. I wasn't suggesting that at all. I'm saying that, I mean, obviously you have been doing the work for the last two years by your testimony here, and I know it's extremely disappointing for you, Barbara, and it's hard for us too. Although I will say, you know, the governor's vetoed the higher education budget. That's there's some money there that the budget now looks like there might be some other funds for. I'm not saying it is, but basically what I'm saying is this is a big enough chunk, though, that it may be an issue that will take place in the negotiations. I don't believe we can find it in the DHR budget. So that's what I'm saying.
I agree with you, Matt.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Let's make sure we
agree. Representative Joe Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if you might have asked a couple of questions.
Sure.
I think, I believe I was out of the, or I was not here the day that this public hearing was held on this particular budget. I want to ask a couple of questions. The total number of clients that this office serves on an annual basis is approximately what?
Representative Strobeck, Madam Chair. Barbara Simaglio, Director of the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs, for the record. Didn't do it. last biennium, we served approximately 70,000 clients. And that is not totally an unduplicated number.
Okay. And this sheet was one that you provided for us today, is that correct?
That is correct. That's just a summary of some of the additional services and outcomes that would be realized from this money.
Well, I just did some quick adding here, and some of these are probably duplicated numbers as well, but if the total client base that you're serving is 70,000 approximately now, this $20 million investment or additional service, this adds up to nearly 90,000 by the way I read it, so that would be certainly leveraging a lot more money than the total budget now. Wouldn't that be the case?
Representative Strobeck, Madam Chair, I want to make it clear that some of these numbers represent additional services that would be provided to clients who may already be receiving services. Part of what we were intending to do in this package is to be able to address our infrastructure needs. Right now, the services that are reimbursed through our office are fairly limited. They don't include things like case management, family counseling, and other wraparound services that are actually very essential for success. And so these numbers represent people who would be able to receive additional services beyond what they're currently able to receive in the reimbursement rate now.
So, for a follow-up, is it fair to say then that that you're not talking about doubling the number of people served, but enhancing the comprehensiveness of the programs that are delivered to people who are already existing clients? Is that correct?
Representative Strobeck, Madam Chair, that is, some would be newly served and some would be enhanced services. It is a combination, and like I said, our approach in what we put together represented an analysis of where the system needed to be enhanced, and so it was not simply based on brand new services.
I just want to make sure that we're clear on that. When we see a sheet like this, it seems to imply that there will be another 90,000 people almost who are not going to get any services, and I don't think that's the case. I think based on your testimony just now, and I understand and I read in your budget notebook that the comprehensiveness and the wraparound nature of the services does prove itself to be effective in people who are successful once they complete the treatment. I'd also just observe that that this $20 million enhancement in the governor's budget was made at a time when the governor had 4.548 as his school funding number. There's a couple of $100 million difference there. That was why he was able to do things like this. And if we're talking about 4749 or whatever the number is for education, that's 475? Is that what you said?
The governor's number, if you're talking about governor, 495.
Okay. There's a problem, then, if you go to that, add another $400 million with an enhancement like this in the governor's original budget. And I would just submit that for my purposes, if there's ever a tobacco settlement to speak of that does have the ability to drive a lot of interest into service programs, that these are the kinds of programs that we ought to be talking about for tobacco settlement money,
right,
not one-time expenditures in the biennial education budget.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Question. Senator George.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. As a new person on the committee, this may be a very naive question. I'm looking on E32, and it's talking about coordination with other state agencies, and I always think about giving somebody a fish or teaching them how to fish. And on the first bullet point, it talks about coordinating with all of the agencies, E32.
I'm sorry, Senator.
Oh, okay. It sounds almost identical to what you were saying a minute ago.
It's in the budget book, Senator?
Yes. E32. And it talks about the coordinating with all the other government agencies in order to provide training and identification, referral, and treatment of alcohol and drug abuse problems. And I'm just wondering, are we moving that way so that everybody who's coming in contact with these people may not only be able to do a referral, but actually have the background that they may actually be able to start helping the person? Are we thinking in those terms?
Senator George, Madam Chair, yes. Actually, the point of the work we've been doing over this past year is really to build a more systematic approach. We know that if our services are uncoordinated, we're certainly not able to be as successful with a family as if the services are linked, and we have consistent screening and referral and follow-up between agencies. So an integrated approach is very much what we're trying to accomplish.
But my point was this, is that if everyone who might have contact with a person who may be suffering with an alcohol or drug problem was, in fact, had the background to be able to continue to, you know, make the same story, the same pitch for rehab, you know, you need to identify this is a problem. Well, you don't want everybody being a counselor, but at the same time, when it says that we're, and treatment of alcohol and other abuse, it's part of the coordinating of all of these people. Are we trying to get that training? Because we're so used to now, when we have to do training, we get a video. Or we plug it in. Everybody sits and watches the video, and then we talk about the video. So, and whether it's in a church or whatever, you can train people pretty quickly to be good counselors or advisors or however we want to describe them. And I didn't know if that's where we were headed or not.
Well, Senator, actually, our office does have a comprehensive training program that we offer to all of our other DHR agencies. So we systematically train people to identify and be able to refer people to treatment. One of the goals in the report is a comprehensive approach to screening. So you are correct that people need to be made aware if there is an alcohol or drug issue, they need to deal with that and make that referral. Unfortunately, that's probably not as easy as it may seem, because raising that kind of sensitive issue is very difficult when families come in for services. So training is the place we start. But building, again, an integrated approach so that people can then receive the referral and support is pretty critical. We don't find that even, for example, in a primary physician's office, people often get the type of identification and screening that we would hope. So I think we have a long way to go to see that it's touched upon in all the ways that it could be.
Question. Thinking kind of along the same line, but carrying it even further. We have our county and city programs, and we heard testimony here from them. And it seems to me that there ought to be a way, and maybe there is some of this already, that if you have a organization that is doing well, that is getting results, and there probably are a lot of them around the state, why couldn't we work together more to really concentrate funding there where they need it? Right now there's so many, and all need some. And I'm thinking of, for instance, City Concerns. Are you familiar with them in Portland? I believe they do an excellent job. Our senator, you're probably familiar with them. And they have learned many things. I've visited their organization and their facilities. and they treat the street people, the really down and outers that just don't have a prayer in the world of succeeding without someone truly taking them in and showing them that they must cooperate with the program or they're lost. They don't keep them if they won't cooperate. And they give them, they've learned that they have to have 24-hour care and live-in care. In order, I don't mean live-in care, but they have to have a place to live and be accountable for their various types of treatment. But there is a place that is a functioning organization, and they need money desperately to enlarge and take care of these needs. And there's a lot of, it's not just the real down-and-outers, as you know, that need it either, but I believe there must be a way to get a more of a city, county, state coordination so we can center the funds and focus the funds to really make a difference, more of a difference. I don't know.
Madam Chair, Representative Loken, one of the things that Barbara's worked on since she came into this job a couple of years ago is to try to build a more results-based system so that we are actually spending our money where we're getting better results, which I think is what you're describing. I mean, and this is not easy because you're moving money from one program to another, sometimes well-established programs that aren't getting results. Mm-hmm. And we're looking, Barbara's looking at, you know, does it make sense for us to spend as much money in residential care when maybe we can get better results and more capacity out of outpatient care? Now, those are hard decisions to make because you've got residential facilities that aren't going to like that at all if you begin to say we're going to invest more in outpatient in our future and less in residential. But those are the hard kinds of decisions that Barbara and her staff are making right now. So I think we are trying to find the places that get the best results for that money, and we're going to invest in them, which is what I hear you asking us to do. But you will hear from some, you know, if there's a residential treatment facility in your district and we say we're going to invest in fewer beds in you because we want more outpatients, they're going to come to you, Representative Loken, and ask you to say, what's going on with that alcohol and drug program?
Mm-hmm. Are you focusing then on coordinating your efforts a lot with the cities and the counties and, you know, really looking at where the funds are working the best?
Representative Loken, members of the committee, the majority of our funding goes through the county mental health system, and so there is a requirement that the local alcohol and drug planning committee develop a county plan so that they can select those services that are most effective in their estimation. So it is very much locally based and allows the local communities to develop their own strategies for success. We do fund some regional programs that serve several counties, but the majority of the program is planned locally. The counties and cities also have funds that come directly to them that they put in to match. So actually, we provide a framework, but the decisions are really made locally into how they want to spend those monies.
Yeah, well, I guess that is. Thank you. And just one more comment. I think that is someplace we really have to work together and not fragment our funds so much. And you, Madam Chair, were talking about that too. And really, really focus those efforts and maybe be a little more limited in how widespread they are if we can make the main efforts work better, the main organizations that are working out there productively.
Mm-hmm.
Just my thinking.
And I just want to, follow up on those comments, agree with them, and say that will the state be determining criteria? What really is a successful program? I mean, will you be saying, you know, this when you make these choices, are you basing it on a criteria of real
successful outcomes. And I think about what you're talking about, maybe some programs where they've got residential treatment and some that are outpatient treatment. Certainly there's a client that would do better in outpatient and one that would do better in inpatient. Are you going to be sort of setting the criteria so we can make the money go as far as we can, but not, I mean, we want it to be used usefully. I'm sure you do that. You want that too. But I think that not just every community, you talked about strategies for success, but hopefully that's different than the actual measurement, outcome measurements for what you consider success and how you will then spend the dollars for specific programs.
Yeah. Well, Madam Chair, yes, we do have criteria. We license programs. They have to meet certain criteria, but then they also have to use what we call the ORSAM criteria. The Oregon Society of Addiction Medicine has criteria, and we have that in our rules where they have to place people according to levels of care. So when someone comes in the door, we don't just say, well, you go here because that's where we have a spot today. Mm-hmm. They have to go through an assessment. They have to be placed according to whether they meet the criteria for residential care or outpatient care. So we do believe we've made a lot of progress in using the dollars most effectively. And we will continue to do that. One of the things that we did have in this budget was a plan to do more outcome measurements, and we hope to still do that. I mean, that is something that we are committed to because we know that unless we are able to have a system to better measure the outcomes, we won't be able to tell what's working and what's not working. But currently, we do not have the capacity to do that systematically. We've begun the process, but that is something in our breakdown. We did ask for some funds to be able to do an outcome study, and we had plans to partner with the university in order to be able to do that. I just received a note from the back here that to mention that currently we're in the process of getting rule revisions in place that will move the criteria to the whole system of care. So everyone coming in will have to receive an assessment and be placed according to those criteria.
Okay. And I think that as a committee, we should really look at the bottom line today. We are not, the LFO is recommending that we not do the enhancement, but we do need to realize there still will be, with the federal funds, some $80 million, almost $81 million that is going to be going to this. So I still think it is a legitimate effort to follow through and make sure that, you know, these are the outcomes are good outcomes and that they're based on some criteria. So hopefully you will continue to go forward with that element. Representative Brown,
your question. Well, I agree with you that we are spending $80 million on that, and that's not an insignificant investment.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that is an important investment, even though we would like to do more. Clearly, we'd like to do more. I'm very supportive of your efforts with families and children and being sure that addicted parents, particularly parents of young children, get treatment and have that available. But I'm also interested in it, and I have less knowledge and acquaintance with the capacity, the access for treatment to those who are either in the criminal justice system or are at risk of becoming in. And a lot of the priorities I've seen in the past that young males, like 17 to 23, very high risk group for crime, are at the bottom of the list for treatment. And I could you enlighten us about that picture in terms of do we turn the criminal justice system to treat these people, or do you have some capacity? How's that piece of the public safety picture being addressed?
Representative Ross, members of the committee, one of the areas that we want to enhance, and as part of this package, is adolescent services.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're asking about young adults, but I think it's important to know that one of the areas where our system is the weakest is in treating high-risk youth. And we know that as people are coming into the juvenile justice system, OYA or community juvenile justice system, that alcohol and drug is a very significant risk factor. I personally am very concerned that statewide we only have 60 beds to treat adolescents. What we often see happening is those people who are not able to get treated when they're experiencing problems in their young time of life go on to end up in the criminal justice system. And even though more and more in prisons you see treatment programs available, when those folks get out of those treatment programs, they're right back on the street, and then we need to have those community follow-ups and support for them. So that is the group that you're talking about, which often becomes the revolving door because there isn't a real good linking from adolescent services to, you know, institutions back out in the community. And that's part of what we're, the group Gary mentioned that he's chairing. We're trying to take a look at what we can do to better connect those kinds of services and I guess just talk to each other and coordinate how we're serving those high-risk folks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very, very challenging population, and I think one that we're very concerned about and know that we need more.
Right. And just to follow up on that, I was impressed with the study and the tour we got before about the reduction in crime and the reduction in arrests and incarceration of those who had received treatment. And so somehow we have to get around to making that treatment available and doing the outreach with the high-risk groups, because I can't believe the local deputy sheriffs and the local social workers and folks in those communities don't know who those young adolescents and young adults are and know who's already addicted and who's committing that pattern of crime. And you've got a lot of victims out there that those you got the victim and you got the person who's addicted who's also a victim in their own life. But you come here, I'll follow with interest. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Did you have another question?
Senator Jurist. Thank you, Madam Chair. We have a problem that sort of a lot of countries in the world. Do you folks look at other areas, other countries, how they're working their treatment programs? I mean, we have a lot of civil liberties issues that may stop us from saying, I'm sorry, you're just no more of this, we're going to imprison you or something like that. What I'm saying is, if you look around the world, there must be programs that are being accomplishing the goal, or are we the state of the art?
Well, Senator George, members of the committee, I actually think if you look at the drug problem around the world, America has one of the worst situations.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably could go on for a while about why that might be, but nevertheless, you know, we're the largest nation. We have an affluent population. They have easy access. You know, marijuana, methamphetamines, they get them right here. I mean, they don't have to go too far. And, of course, alcohol, which is legal, and tobacco, which is legal,
mm-hmm.
are challenges. So I think we're doing as well as anyone can expect given the circumstances that we face. But it is a community problem, and I think prevention is an area. I mentioned you weren't with us when we did our presentation, but the state at this point does not put any general revenue into alcohol and drug prevention services. All of the funds that we get to do prevention are federal. And so it hardly seems that we even have enough to begin a good fight. We have maybe one full-time person working in a county on this issue to do a number of different things. So it's a huge challenge, and I think that's why we're here, is to let it be known that you know, if we are to get ahead of it, it's going to take a lot more than what we've been able to do so far.
Okay. You know, I do want to add a bright note here. Sometimes we think that the kids in their teen years, they are the hardest to treat. But some of my own experiences working in the inner city and really working intensively with some street kids that have, you know, needed treatment, is that you might start with them when they're 16 or 17, and you might have them in one or two or three different treatment programs over those years, and the program might not take a hold until they're 20 or 25.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that that treatment program back then was necessarily a failure, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it started at least on the right road. And I think of one young man in Southeast Portland that I know who's probably cost the state of Oregon $10,000 a year, you know, for 7 or 8 years, but now finally is clean and sober and working and paying taxes. You have a choice. You know, you stick with him, even though it may not seem very productive at first, and you finally get to the point where he's paying us instead of us paying him, or you don't. And maybe that person just, you know, kills themselves by the age of 30 or 40 with alcohol and drugs and so on. I do want to make one other comment, and I know it's for the record, and I've said it before, but our good friend, the Representative Liz Van Leeuwen, did leave out the school when she left the legislature, and that was her beer wine tax. There is still, and I say unto all of you, there is still no reason why, if we had the guts, we couldn't pass a beer wine tax. We are still, 46th out of 50 states. We have the fourth of the lowest beer wine tax in the United States. We refuse to think about them.
Mm-hmm.
We refuse to talk about it. It's like having an elephant in the middle of the room, and we don't want to talk about it. We have not raised the beer wine tax in 22 years. Finding another tax that we haven't raised in 22 years. I mean, you know, I'm just putting that back on the record for all of you. I know that this is the preacher preaching, but hey, what are we doing? I mean, we say we have this huge problem. We just did it with a tobacco tax, you know, to deal with the tobacco. I mean, we passed the tobacco, we put it out to the voters. I'll bet if we even put it out to the voters, they'd say, yeah, let's do it. I mean, 8 cents of one penny is the amount of tax we have on a can of beer. 8 cents of one penny, fourth from the bottom in the country, and we don't want to touch it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Strobeck.
I move the that the committee accept the LFO recommendations for the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs, send it to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Strobeck has moved that the committee accept the LFO recommendations for the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs and send it to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Or is there any more discussion? Is there objection? Senator Shields, Representative Ross, let the record show. Having a majority. Okay. Oh, do we have? Oh, okay. You don't?
Oh, that's all right. No, that's
all right. We'll do that via chat. Okay, well, we are adjourned for today. We will reconvene on Monday. And
is it going to get centered?